Hi, everybody. This is Ryan from The Thing That You're Currently Watching. Please enjoy this pitch meeting for Ant-Man, which I made several years ago. The pitch meeting, I did not make the movie myself. And then if you stick around after, I'm going to talk about the pitch meeting and the movie itself and answer some comments and shoot the poop. As you do that, I'm going to draw an ant. So, you're here to talk about Ant-Man.
Yes, sir, I am.
Cool, so, do you need your parking validated or something?
What?
Make sure you pull on the door on your way out, because it looks like a push, but it's actually a pull.
Don't you want me to pitch to you?
Oh, you're not leaving?
I wasn't planning on it.
Wow, well, awesome. We had a lot of people leave the project, so I just kind of assumed.
Wow, bummer.
Yeah, so, you know, please don't leave me, you're my last hope.
Sounds good.
Please.
Okay.
So what's the story about?
Well, you know how in the first Iron Man movie, there's a character that develops a super suit, and then he's like, oh, this is too powerful to get out. But then a corporate bad guy from the same company wants to sell it, and then makes his own evil version of the suit. And so you end up with a big final fight of nice guy super suit versus evil guy super suit.
Yeah.
So what I'd like to do is that.
Well, if it ain't broke, you know, keep doing it till it stops making money.
That's what I figured.
So tell me about the characters.
Well, first of all, there's Hank Pym. He's the one that invented the shrinking technology, and he used to be Ant-Man.
How is that technology gonna work?
Inconsistently.
Oh.
Yeah, we're gonna say that it reduces the space between atoms so objects keep their mass, but then we're gonna do a bunch of stuff that contradicts that.
How so?
Well, sometimes Ant-Man's gonna have the mass and force of a full-grown man, but other times he'll be light enough to run on a gun barrel or ride an ant. And Hank Pym is gonna have an actual tank as a keychain, which should weigh about 60 tons.
Why so inconsistent?
Well, I wanted to do certain things because they would look cool, but then I was like, oh, those totally break the rules that I myself established in the script.
Yeah.
But then I was like, I don't care.
And you did it anyway.
And I did it anyway.
The rule of cool strikes again.
Yeah, so anyway, Hank wants this guy Scott to become Ant-Man and save the world because he can't do it himself anymore.
Scott?
Yeah, he's this guy that's just getting out of jail.
Why does Hank want him?
Well, Scott's an amazing thief, like the stuff of legends when it comes to stealing.
Why was he in jail?
Oh, because he got caught stealing.
Doesn't sound like he's that good at it.
Yeah, I guess not. In fact, he's gonna fail pretty much any time he tries to steal something in the movie.
Strange choice of a guy to save the world.
I guess so.
So what does Scott say when Hank asks him?
Oh, well, he doesn't ask him directly.
Oh, he doesn't?
No, instead he sets up a super elaborate series of events that could go wrong in a thousand different ways, just so that maybe Scott could steal the suit.
Why didn't he just ask him?
He wanted to see if he'd be able to break into a safe.
Could have just asked him.
Yeah, but this way's more fun.
This Hank guy is playing around a lot for someone who wants to save the world.
Oh, yeah.
Huh.
Anyway, Scott was in jail for about 5 years, so now he wants to make money so he could pay child support and see his daughter.
How old is his daughter?
She's like 6 or 7.
So he went to jail for stealing when he had a 1 or 2 year old baby at home.
That's right.
I gotta say, Hank Pym is putting a lot of faith in this super sketchy dude.
Yeah, well, he says everyone deserves a second chance.
Yeah, but should your second chance out of jail have save the world level stakes?
Probably not.
So who else is in the movie?
Well, there's Hank's daughter Hope that he keeps secrets from for no valid reason.
Huh.
And she's gonna fall in love with Scott because they're both attractive.
And is there a villain in the movie?
Oh yeah, we've got this villain Darren Cross, and he is evil.
So what's his deal?
I just told you.
Oh.
Yeah, just like a generic evil guy, you know?
That's what I'm talking about.
So he wants to sell this yellow jacket suit to some evil military types.
Right, like an Iron Man.
But one of them's not super interested. So Cross is gonna use his incomplete shrink tech to turn him into a tiny pile of goo and flush him down a toilet.
Jesus, why doesn't he try selling that as a weapon? That's horrifying.
He doesn't think of that, I guess.
Now, I hate to do this, but is there a way we could kinda tie this movie in with the Avengers?
Oh, yeah, super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'll just add like a little side quest where Ant-Man has to go get a thing and he'll end up fighting an Avenger.
I love it. What Avenger did you have in mind?
Well, Iron Man would be cool.
Yeah, if you want to double the movie's budget.
Oh, does Robert Downey Jr. cost a lot?
You're damn right he does. That guy's contracts basically drain money from our bank accounts.
Oh, wow.
Did you know that according to his last contract, we have to pay him every time he uses our bathrooms?
I didn't know that.
Every time he poops in this building, it costs us $1,000.
Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that bad of a deal.
Yeah, it's kind of a steal when you think about it.
So anyway, how does the movie end?
Well, Darren Cross is gonna end up figuring out the shrink tech and finishing his suit.
Uh-oh.
So the team is gonna try to steal the technology from him. And it's gonna end in this big fight between him and Scott in their little super suits.
How's that gonna go?
Well, despite having no training and never having been in the suit before, Cross is gonna be like an expert fighter.
Wow.
And then Scott's gonna go subatomic to kill him.
Subatomic?
Yeah, like smaller than an atom.
But you said the technology works by bringing atoms closer together.
Yeah, whatever.
Okay.
And then Scott's gonna be pardoned for all the illegal stuff he did, and he's gonna dedicate himself to his family.
Yeah, I guess he's not gonna want to do anything that would jeopardize being able to see his daughter.
That's the last thing he'd do.
So I think I still pretty much stand by everything I said in this video multiple years ago. If I were to change something, I probably wouldn't have spent like the first 30 seconds talking about how multiple filmmakers left this project. That's kind of like a topical thing. I probably would just end with, you know how I like smash cut to an end screen? I probably would just use that reference there if I were to write this today. Kind of a big thing in entertainment news back then. It was just like, oh, another filmmaker left Ant-Man. Edgar Wright had been attached at a certain point, Adam McKay, and they're both still, you know, credited as screenwriters on this movie. My feeling on Ant-Man with no insider knowledge is that they wanted to do something very different and then got scared. They hired very interesting filmmakers like Edgar Wright and Adam McKay, took a couple of those elements and then toned it way down, and then just really went with the kind of Marvel formula, which was in full swing by 2015. There are little nuggets in there. You know, I'm not very familiar with Peyton Reed, but there are moments in Ant-Man that it's like, oh, that feels like Edgar Wright or Adam McKay. One of the funnest moments of the movie, the whole retelling of the story thing. That's totally something you could see in an Edgar Wright movie or an Adam McKay movie. I'm kind of glad, actually, that Adam McKay didn't end up directing this movie, because I love the projects that he kind of worked on instead. Just in my personal opinion, he's one of the most interesting directors out there today. Stuff that comes to mind for me is in Vice. There's a scene where there's this conversation between Dick Cheney and his wife, and the whole premise is kind of like, we don't know what was said during this conversation, but it must have happened. And then the characters are just kind of speaking in Shakespearean language.
Parched maw craned towards the drip. Drip of imagined waters.
It's so different. I love it so much. Also, like Margot Robbie explaining real estate stuff in a bathtub, so you'll pay attention to the complicated lingo. It's brilliant. He produces Succession, one of my favorite shows on TV right now. Winning Time is really fun. I love what he does with the different camera styles, different film stock and looks and stuff. He's a filmmaker that I think isn't afraid to try new stuff. I think I heard on some behind the scenes stuff on Don't Look Up that he edited some jokes in a way that was inspired by how people on TikTok are editing stuff. Like where instead of letting the punchline play out and cutting away, you kind of cut away during the punchline. Anyway, this Ant-Man revisit kind of turned into me just praising Adam McKay, but there you go. I do remember when researching this pitch meeting, that's when I first discovered what the rule of cool was, which is something that explains so many problems with so many movies. Like the filmmakers decided that because something was so cool, it didn't really matter if it broke the rules. This happens a lot in blockbuster movies. It's honestly kind of the lifeblood of pitch meetings. Another thing that this pitch meeting reminded me of is that Ant-Man definitely had that because he's the main character syndrome. Scott Lang was not the most qualified person for the job by a mile, and it made very little sense to even hire him on this thing. It reminds me of like in Avatar 2 when they brought that colonel back, and it's like, really? This, the guy who failed, that's who you're bringing back for this? And that goo gun thing is still probably one of the most horrifying weapons we've ever seen in the MCU. I would watch a whole movie where a bad guy goes around with that gun. Honestly, that's horrifying. I don't want to turn to goo. I like being mostly not goo. And Ant-Man also has that thing that we've seen in almost every superhero movie where the main character spends the whole movie kind of training and learning to use their suit. And then at the end, the bad guy gets a suit and they're just the same level of fighting ability. How are you so coordinated, bad guys? Now, I asked you guys in the last video to send me questions and stuff because I'd love to answer them. I was lying. I don't want to do that. No, okay, I'll do it. Maybe I'll make a little graphic that says question zone or something for this. Ryan's the type of guy to rise into the air after smelling some pie. Yeah, that wasn't a question, but yes. Love to know what Ryan's personal favorite pitch meeting is. The one where you sit back afterwards and go, yeah, I bleep nailed that. Probably Cats. I had a lot of fun with that one. That movie is so strange. It's hard to explain, but I had a lot of fun with that pitch meeting and I really got to do some weird things with it. And that movie kind of bombed also. So not a lot of people went to see the movie. So I kind of took that bullet and translated it for everybody. In terms of pitch meetings, that was by far the most jellical. First of all, please keep the revisited episodes coming. How do you approach a pitch meeting for a movie you like as opposed to one you don't like? And do you ever find yourself writing a pitch meeting in your head while watching the movie? Hi, I'm continuing this on my phone because I did not charge my camera battery properly. Anyway, yeah, I like most of the movies I do pitch meetings for. I have massive respect for people who make movies. I approach them all pretty much the same way. I'm looking for like logical inconsistencies. If I didn't like a movie or show, you could probably tell because I'm a little more harsh with my jokes. And yeah, as I'm watching movies, I'm thinking of the pitch meeting. I'm taking notes. If something doesn't make sense, I make a mental note, or I sit in the back row of a theater and discreetly write on my phone, "I'm sorry. I know I shouldn't do that, but sometimes I gotta take a note." Historically, we've only really been able to know you through the characters you play, and it's rare and surprising when you talk to us as yourself. Are you worried that if you pull back the curtain and make more candid style content, it might somewhat shatter the illusion the audience has?
Honestly, yep, a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
I am so much more comfortable as a character on screen than I am as myself.
But that's something that I'd like to work on about myself and improve on.
So here we are.
Honestly, just I've made a couple of these kinds of videos, and the response from people has been really, really, really nice. I think Pitch Meeting and my own channel is just one of the most kind and wholesome communities on the internet. It's very rare to see kind of toxicity going on in the comments. I am scared, but I also feel like you guys are really cool. And just like messages I've gotten on Instagram or on Twitter or in comment sections have been so encouraging that I feel like a lot of people are seeing me more as a human person. And while it might break the illusion for some people and maybe they'll enjoy pitch meetings less, I think it also has the potential to add another layer of enjoyment for other people.
I don't know. We'll see.
But to answer your question, I'm scared of everything all the time.
Okay, I'm gonna end this here, and I hope this was fun a little bit. Bye.